Hello and good morning. It's time to read the Des Moines Register for Sunday, April 21st, 2024. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. I'm Seth Anderson, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Rebecca Cloud. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinions, sports, and Dear Abby. The third hour continues with more sports and lighter news. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can help keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at weather and headlines from today's Des Moines Sunday Register. Today we've got a high of 61, low of 38, sunny to partly cloudy. Monday, we'll have a high of 71, low of 51, partly sunny. Tuesday, high of 68, low of 39. Wednesday, high of 64, low of 44. And heading into the weekend, highs around 66 on Thursday and Friday and 72 on Saturday. Headlines from today's Des Moines Sunday Register. We're losing farmland like crazy. Iowa restricts foreign-owned land but misses bigger threat, farmers say. Nearly 350 employees leave 9 Iowa AEAs, with new law many uncertain of stability. Metro and Iowa headlines, Iowa lawmakers wrap up 2024 session, gavel drops after late night marathon. Legislators approve tax trim to flat 3.8% and Daisy to get millions in incentives for planned plant. And now over to Rebecca for a first story of the day.
All right, good morning. We'll start with our first main story. We're losing farmland like crazy. Iowa restricts foreign-owned land but misses bigger threat, farmers say. And this comes to us from Danelle Eller with the Des Moines Register. It also includes a photo with Kayla Scramstead, who talks with State Representative Mike Sexton as they feed a herd of sheep on Sexton's farm near Rockwell City. Iowa Representative Mike Sexton says no foreign residents, companies, or groups should own any of Iowa's rich farmland. If they do, they're breaking the law, Sexton says, a Northwest Republican. The Iowa legislature this year didn't go quite that far when it tightened Iowa's already restrictive law on foreign ownership of farmland. It increased reporting requirements, boosted penalties for violations, and gave the Attorney General's office subpoena powers to investigate possible violations. The action came as U.S. and Iowa politicians warned that China and other foreign enemies are gobbling up the country's farmland. But foreign agricultural land holdings in Iowa are less than 2%, most of it by U.S. allies like Canada and Italy. China's share is only a fraction of that amount. Some Iowans, Sexton included, believe that the greater threat is big money investors, from capital investment funds to tech billionaires, sports celebrities and churches that are helping to drive Iowa farmland values to historic highs, further pushing ownership out of reach of Iowa farmers. My farming buddies are mostly frustrated by big American corporations and investors snapping up Iowa farmland, not foreign buyers, acknowledged Sexton, who raises sheep near Rockwell City. With average values spiking 420% over two decades, Iowa farmland has become increasingly attractive. Even though, as of 2022, 75% of Iowa farmland was owned by Iowans, 20%, about 6 million acres, belonged to people who lived outside the state, up from 13% 5 years earlier, an Iowa State University survey shows. And experts expect a massive wave of ownership changes over the next couple of decades because roughly two-thirds of Iowa farmland, about 22 million acres, is owned by people 65 and older. State Representative J.D. Schlotten, a Northwest Iowa Democrat, worries that farmland ownership is becoming consolidated, as have fertilizer manufacturing, meatpacking, and other ag industries. Over a decade, the number of farms in Iowa with 2,000 or more acres has grown 42%. The 2022 U.S. Agriculture Census released this year shows. It's just a matter of time until we see corporations buying up Iowa farmland and pretty much making farmers serfs, Shulton said. Where foreign land ownership factors most in Iowa is in wind and solar energy production, rather than crop and livestock production. In 2021, renewable energy companies held about 90% of the state's foreign-held land, about 453,000 of the nearly 508,000 acres, though through leases that are at least a decade long, according to 2021 U.S. Department of Agricultural data, the most recent information about how Iowa land is used. Foreign agricultural holdings include land that was acquired before 1980, when many of the state's original 1970s restrictions on foreign ownership took effect. And the law exempts foreign-owned land purchase for research, and in some cases development, limiting purchases to 320 acres that must be converted to their specified use within 5 years. Ag land holdings include those by foreign companies that do business in Iowa, like AstraZeneca, the United Kingdom Pharmaceutical Seed and Crop Production Conglomerate, Germany's Lay Cement, Engine Moto Heartland, a Japanese company that makes animal food ingredients in Eddyville, and SSAB Iowa, a Swedish steel plate maker previously named IPSCO, USDA data shows. In 2022, Iowa had nearly 514,000 foreign-held acres, about 6,500 acres, or 1.3% more than it had in 2021, the USDA reported. Canada had the largest holdings in Iowa at nearly 200,000 acres. Italy followed at 104,000 acres, Germany 17,000, the United Kingdom 15,000, and all other countries less than 184,000 acres. Iowa's only Chinese holding was 265 acres owned by Syngenta, a seed and crop production protection giant in Boone County, according to the report. ChemChina purchased the Switzerland-based company in 2017, and it was later folded into SynChem Holdings. Altogether, Iowa's foreign ag land holdings were valued at $2.04 billion in 2021, USDA data shows. Last year, Arkansas ordered Syngenta to divest of 160 acres within 2 years, and pay $280,000 in civil penalty after passing new restrictions, barring U.S. adversaries from owning farmland or real property. Excuse me. They're what I refer to as the Big Four: China, Iran, North Korea, and Russia. Thank you. Said Micah Brown, a National Agricultural Law Center attorney. Arkansas, Louisiana, and Florida are among the few states that have placed limits as well on foreign ownership of real property, which could include businesses like meatpacking, manufacturing, and other facilities, Brown said. Shulton calls the changes to Iowa's law, the first bill the legislature sent to Governor Kim Reynolds this year, the, quote, gold standard for preventing foreign ownership of Iowa farmland. And he said the Attorney General's new subpoena powers, as well as civil penalties for reporting violations, better enable prosecution. We haven't seen any enforcement in 5 years or more, he said. But more work is needed to restrict venture capitalists and other investors from buying Iowa farmland, Shulton said. Foreign ownership is a big deal, but a big deal is Wall Street buying up all the farms, he said. Iowa has laws restricting corporate ownership, but they have several exemptions, said Jennifer Swaggerman, director of Drake University's Agricultural Law Center. It's not as restrictive as people might think it is or want it to be, Swaggerman said. The real focus is more on investment and corporate ownership at a domestic level. Even though foreign companies have 453,000 Iowa acres under lease, it's unclear how much land has been used to build renewable energy products, the USDA says, with some yet to be developed. Iowa, for example, has about 4 dozen wind, solar, and battery projects awaiting approval to connect to the grid, according to MISO, the independent group that manages the transmission network. Brown said many companies use long-term leases to, quote, lock up a lot of land so competitors don't have access. Proponents point out that land with wind turbines continues to be farmed. That's also true with solar installations. Farmers graze livestock and grow vegetable around the panels. The renewable energy products also generate revenue for farmers and supply taxes for cities and counties and other local governments. Still, opponents complain the projects drive up rent for farmland or take it out of production. The 2022 U.S. Ag Census showed Iowa had lost nearly 586,000 farm acres in the 5 years since 2017. Over 20 years, Iowa has lost 1.7 million acres of ag land. Carrie Johansson, the Iowa Environmental Council's Energy Program Director, said urban sprawl, however, is more likely responsible for chewing up ag land than renewable energy installations. Studies have shown that to fully power Iowa with renewable energy would require about 1% of the state's land for solar installations, she said. Spread across the state, that's not a huge impact to land access, Johansson said. Still, she worries that concerns over foreign companies holding leases on Iowa farmland could become another reason for opposition to wind, solar, and other renewable energy projects. About a dozen Iowa counties have restricted renewable energy projects amid growing concern over alleged detriments to health and economic development. 2 years ago, Iowa lawmakers considered a bill that would restrict where solar projects could be developed statewide, proposing to limit them to lower-yielding land. There's a lot of misinformation that gets injected into those discussions, Johansson said, adding, "We don't want foreign ownership to add to that fear factor." We all like our cell phones and laptops, she said, adding that businesses locating in Iowa are looking for clean energy. We need to have a conversation about how we balance those needs. The Iowa Farmers Union, the Iowa Soybean Association, and other large Iowa ag groups say access to land is a top issue for members. Availability and affordability are the main barriers, experts say. The average price of Iowa farmland reached $11,835 an acre last year. An ISU survey shows the second year in a row that the values set a record high. They have climbed 63% compared to 5 years ago when prices dipped during an ag downturn. Auctions of prime farmland in recent years have snagged landowners upward of $30,000 an acre. It's never been easy to start farming, said Iowa Agriculture Secretary Mike Naig, whose family farms in northwest Iowa. That's something that could be said forever in Iowa. But he added, quote, high land costs, high capital costs, high interest rates can make it very daunting. In addition to the land costs, tractors, combines, and other farm equipment can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and prices for seed, fertilizer, and other supplies needed to grow a crop have also climbed in recent years. The state and federal governments have adopted incentives, from tax credits to low-interest loans, designed to overcome some of the barriers by encouraging farmland owners to rent or sell acreage to beginning and disadvantaged growers and military veterans, Naig said. Bud Sexton, the Northwest Iowa farmer and representative, said Reynolds championed tax breaks that Iowa lawmakers passed last year have undercut those incentives. The law enables retired farmers to choose either to avoid taxes from renting land or profits from selling it. Quote, we've reduced the incentive for retiring farmers to want to be a part of that young farmer program, Sexton said. We need to look at that so we can get retiring farmers to be interested in helping young farmers. At the same time, Iowa has tightened its law around foreign ownership Lawmakers are considering a bill that would allow non-U.S. companies to buy 1,000 acres or more of farmland if they're investing at least $1 billion in a manufacturing, bioscience, or research facility. A legislative analysis shows a project meeting the requirements would receive $92.7 million in state tax credits and refunds over 5 years. Shulton said he's one of four representatives to vote against the bill. Quote, "We need to grow our economy, but at what expense?" he said. Granting foreign companies, quote, "something so open-ended," said Aaron Lehman, president of the Iowa Farmers Union Board, "is very concerning to members, especially when we're already dealing with a lot of land access issues. If we're going to make changes to improve land access, it should be for our young and beginning farmers," said Lehman, who farms near Almond in central Iowa. Naik said Iowa has hit the right balance between protecting Iowa farmland, allowing room for economic development, and letting farmers get the highest dollar possible for their land, money they often use to fund their retirements. "We don't want foreign entities competing with Iowa farmers when it comes to actual production," he said. But the law envisions or allows that, yes, you can have direct foreign investment in this state. "And we have a great many companies that are foreign owned," he added. "We want to continue to say that the state of Iowa is open for business, but I think it's wise to have limits. That's just smart." Jacob Bolson is looking forward to his fourth year of farming near Hubbard in north central Iowa, but getting land was a battle. He thought he had a line on a couple of farms, but the owners instead rented their land to well-established operations. Dollar for dollar, it's difficult, if not impossible, to compete against well-capitalized multi-generation operations, said Bolson, who works full-time in the ag industry and farms part-time. Farmers with large operations can offer to pay higher rents to landowners because they're able to spread machinery and other expenses over more acres. In 2020, Bolson connected with a Washington State woman to rent land she owns in Iowa using a Practical Farmers of Iowa program. The landowner qualified for the state's beginning farm tax credit, but applying was extremely complex, said Bolson, who worked with farmers in high school and college, and more recently with his father-in-law, who is a farmer who lives nearby. Quote, "It's a daunting, laborious process," he said, adding that his landlady almost didn't qualify for the tax credit because of a small technical discrepancy in his initial application. Bolson said he sees few beginning farmers who are able to buy Iowa farmland, even with low-interest loans. At the state average value, for example, it would cost $1.4 million to buy 120 acres, about one-third the size of an average Iowa farm. "It just doesn't cash flow," Bolson said, given prices for corn and soybeans, Iowa's two largest crops. Even established farmers struggled to buy Iowa farmland, said Sexton, 62, who lost land he had rented for 40 years when his uncle died and the family's Century Farm was sold. Iowa farmers bought two parcels and an investor group bought the third. "I couldn't afford it," Sexton said. "I don't blame the grandchildren. None of them farm, but it creates a problem for those of us trying to farm the ground." Drake University's Zwagerman said policymakers need to make it more attractive for landowners to keep farmland, using tools like conservation easements that limit the land's use to farming, a practice that also lowers land's costs. "We're losing farmland like crazy," she said. "Restrictions alone on who owns it isn't enough. If legislators don't take action on land access for beginning farmers, rural Iowa will die," Bolson said. Since 1940, the state's non-urban areas have lost 280,000 residents, an ISU analysis shows. And in over a decade, 69 of Iowa's 99 counties lost population, the 2020 census found. "For the sake of small-town America, we've got to figure out how to get more beginning farmers in the countryside," Bolson said. "If we don't, the degradation of rural America is going to accelerate to levels we have never seen before." And back to Seth.
Thanks, Rebecca. Our next story from the front page of the Des Moines Sunday Register. Nearly 350 employees leave 9 Iowa AEAs. With new law, many uncertain of stability. By Stephen Gruber Miller. Ann Thomas sat down to have dinner with her kids in January, her iPhone on the table streaming Governor Kim Reynolds' annual Condition of the State address to Iowa lawmakers. Very quickly, Reynolds unveiled her top legislative proposal for the year, an overhaul of Iowa's area education agencies that would shift funding to school districts, allowing them to contract with private providers rather than the AEAs. I looked up at my kids and I said, "I just lost my job," Thomas said. And they were like, no, you didn't. And I'm like, yeah, I did. I mean, I knew right away that that's how it was going to go down. Thomas works as a media and library services consultant at the Central Rivers AEA in north central Iowa, where she provides professional development to school staff and helps districts understand how to responsibly use artificial intelligence resources in their classes. At least she does until July 1. That will be her last day on the job. Pointing to the uncertainty created by House File 2612, the newly signed law retooling AEAs, Thomas has decided to leave Central Rivers to take a position as a corporate trainer at a large company. She said the agency didn't feel like a stable place to work anymore. She's one of nearly 350 employees who have retired or resigned from Iowa's 9 AEAs since the start of the year, as Iowa lawmakers debated, negotiated, and passed the law, which makes significant changes to the agency's funding structure and responsibilities. AEAs are currently Iowa's sole provider of special education services, as well as providing media services and general education services. Thomas said she and her fellow AEA employees around the state have felt the stress. "It's been a really hard winter and spring mentally for my colleagues, myself and my colleagues," she said. It's been mentally very taxing to have that uncertainty as far as your career goes and the financial stability, not knowing where that's going to land you. The Des Moines Register requested data from all 9 Iowa AEAs on the number of employees who have voluntarily left their jobs since January 1st, either through retirement or resignation. The agencies reported 341 full-time employees have departed since then. The number of departing employees could rise further as the AEAs finalize employment contracts for the coming year and make decisions about what services they can continue offering school districts as some of their funding is diverted to schools. The Register has reported that the AEAs employ more than 3,400 full-time and part-time staff, according to a summary of personnel compiled by the agencies. Reynolds said the changes in the law will provide more transparency and accountability for taxpayer dollars, giving school districts more control over money that now goes to the AEAs and letting the districts choose whether to continue spending it on those services or use it for other needs. "All of this will work its way through the system, and it's okay," she said, "to provide the services, but it's going to be right-sized as it probably should. It was probably top-heavy, and this will work some of that out." 7 of Iowa's 9 AEAs say they already expect higher staff turnover in the 2023-24 school year compared with the previous year, even though the current year isn't over yet. 5 of the AEAs, Central Rivers, Great Prairie, Heartland, Mississippi Bend, and Prairie Lakes, say their 2023-24 turnover rate is the highest in the last 5 years. The 341 employees who are voluntarily leaving the AEAs include Central Rivers AEA, 68 employees, Green Hills AEA, 30 employees, Great Prairie AEA, 32 employees, Grant Wood AEA, 50 employees, Heartland AEA, 70 employees, Keystone AEA, 19 employees, Mississippi Bend AEA, 31 employees, Northwest AEA, 15 employees, and Prairie Lakes AEA has lost 26 employees. Nathan Wood, chief administrator of Great Prairie AEA, said a recent staff survey found 62% of the AEA's employees said they had searched for a different job in the last month because of the prospect of AEA legislation. "This is a reality check that recent legislation has and will continue to impact the AEA system's ability to retain staff and provide effective efficient and economical services to the districts in southeast Iowa, Wood said in a statement. GPAEA is committed to providing services and supports that our districts need in the new model created under the new legislation, but it is reality that we will have to reduce the number of staff we employ over the next few years. At Northwest AEA, Chief Administrator Dan Cox said five staff members said they were retiring earlier than they had planned because of the legislation, and four of those who resigned said it was because of the potential effect of the law. Those voluntary departures do not include layoffs resulting from the new law, which so far number 37 full-time workers and one part-time employee, according to data provided by the AEAs. About half of those layoffs are because of the state's decision to end the AEA's contract to run the Family and Educator Partnership Program. The state has hired the Ask Resource Center, a Johnston-based nonprofit, to fulfill the contract for the next 5 years. Those AEA employees served as liaisons between families of students with disabilities and school districts and AEAs, helping families understand the services available to their student and their rights under state and federal disability laws. AEAs are taking a more cautious approach to replacing their departing staff because of the funding uncertainty created by the new law. John Speer, chief administrator of Grant Wood AEA and the interim chief administrator of the nearby Mississippi Bend AEA, said both AEAs have seen more resignations than they would in a typical year, and both have open positions that they are not hiring for as they wait to see where the dust settles. Both agencies will not have 100% of their staff numbers that we had last year, Speer said. There will be some open positions. At this point, I can't tell you the extent of that or the scope right now. Some of the uncertainty stems from AEAs not knowing how much money they will receive from school districts in the coming years to provide media and general education services. The new law transfers control of that money, about $68 million, to school districts, which no longer have to use the money for similar services. The law gives schools control over 10% of special education funding while keeping 90% of that money with the AEAs. Depending on the level of funding that each individual AEA receives back from their districts, services, I think, will be a little uneven around the state from AEA to AEA, Speer said. And that's unfortunate because the system has always prided itself on the equity of its services. Cindy Yellick, chief administrator of Heartland AEA, called it a chicken or egg situation, where districts need to know what services the AEAs will provide before they decide to sign a new contract, and the AEAs need an idea of how much money will be coming in from school districts. For people who have already left, I think we are definitely taking a strategic look at which positions to fill, because it is so unknown for us and it's so unknown for schools, Yellick said. Yellick said the staff who are staying at the AEAs are passionate about their work. We're trying to reassure families that we're going to remain focused on meeting the needs of kids and schools. That's our top priority, she said. And as the puzzle pieces become clearer, we're going to make decisions that best support our work with families and kids. Thomas, the Central Rivers media consultant, said she doesn't expect the AEA to hire a replacement when she leaves. I mean, there's several reasons why, she said. One, the agency's future is uncertain. The funding is absolutely uncertain. And then who's going to apply with that type of uncertainty in the future? Would you apply for a job that may only last a year? Green Hills AEA in southwest Iowa is seeing some of the deepest impacts, with nearly one-fifth of its staff turning over this year. April Baum is one of the employees who will be leaving this summer. Baum works for the AEA as a teacher in the Juvenile Detention Center in Council Bluffs. But next fall, she's taking a job as a special education teacher at a high school in Nebraska. Baum said she was surprised to see such major changes to the AEAs pass so quickly, especially after AEA employees, as well as parents, teachers, and other education advocates, protested the legislation and blanketed lawmakers with messages supporting the AEAs. It's kind of like the loss of a home base is how a lot of us are feeling right now, she said. And I know I'm not the only one that's leaving. And it really is because of the upheaval. And it was so unexpected that this would happen. It kind of blindsided everybody. Jason Plord, the chief administrator of Green Hills AEA, said the agency normally sees 10 to 12% turnover in a given year. This year we're facing almost 20% turnover, he said. Certainly, that is a result of some of the recent legislation. Plourd said employees are leaving for a variety of reasons. Some are concerned with Iowa's education system and are leaving the state. Others are retiring earlier. Some are going to work in Iowa schools, and some are leaving education altogether. Green Hills is anticipating a $3 million budget cut, which Plourd said will result in cutting 19 positions. Some of those employees who are losing their jobs will be able to fill one of the agency's open positions, he said. Plourd said one of Green Hills' core values is leading through service. And that's what we're doing in the midst of all these challenges, is our staff continue to show up every day, offering these high-quality services and just continuing to make a difference, he said. Reynolds said high turnover isn't unique to the AEAs. She told reporters school districts for years have had employees leave to take jobs with the AEAs because they couldn't compete with what the agencies could pay. And she said she gets notices from businesses every week that have to lay off employees because they need to meet a budget because things have changed. The environment is different. That's a reality of a business, and it has to be a reality of what they're doing, she said of the AEAs. They're literally a business. They are a provider of education, media, and special education services. Democrats have taken issue with Reynolds' comments. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst, Democrat of Windsor Heights, told reporters that kids are not products and they need unique services. Stop comparing kids to business, she said. Stop comparing the AEAs, who provide critical services to Iowa kids, to a business and talk about right-sizing. It's offensive to the people who do this work. We're not talking about widgets here. We're talking about kids. Baum said she doesn't know who may step up to offer the services that the AEAs currently provide. She thinks it will take a long time to build up trust with those providers. I'm all for competition, typically, you know, she said, but when it comes to education and kids and families, there's just a lot to it, and a lot of trust that goes into putting your kids in public school. And now back to Rebecca for our next story.
All right, so our next story is teachers, staff can now carry firearms at school. This also comes to us from the front section of the Des Moines Register. And the article is written by Stephen Grubin Miller of the Des Moines Register. Iowa teachers and other school employees can get a new professional permit to carry guns on school grounds under a law Governor Kim Reynolds signed Friday. The law, House File 2586, also gives school districts and armed employees qualified immunity for their use of reasonable force. And it requires the state's largest school districts to employ school resource officers in their high schools, unless their school board votes to opt out. Reynolds announced the law signing without comment in a Friday afternoon news release. The law's Republican supporters have said allowing school districts to choose whether to allow armed staff on school grounds is a way to give districts more control over safety in the wake of a deadly shooting at Perry High School in January. Democrats and gun violence prevention groups say it will make students and school employees less safe by increasing the likelihood of gun accidents in schools. A 2023 report from Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence documented about 100 incidents of guns being mishandled, left in the reach of children, or accidentally discharged at schools over the last 5 years. More than 30 states allow teachers or other K-12 school staff to be armed in at least some circumstances, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. What training would Iowa staff need for a permit to carry guns at school? Those who want to carry firearms in school will be required to go through a permit process that includes one-time, in-person legal training covering qualified immunity, emergency medical training, and communication training, as well as quarterly firearm training and annual, quote, live scenario training. That process would be approved by the Iowa Department of Public Safety. The legislation allowing school employees to obtain professional permits to carry firearms applies to K-12 public and private schools, community colleges, and public and private colleges and universities. The identity of a staff member who has a professional carry permit would be confidential and exempt from Iowa's public records law. A Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll conducted in February found 60% of Iowans favored allowing teachers and other staff to carry firearms in schools after completing training. 38% opposed the policy and 1% were not sure. The bill would give qualified immunity to armed school staff with professional permits, protecting them from civil lawsuits or criminal prosecution if they used, quote, reasonable force and acted within the course of their duties. Iowa law already allowed school employees to carry firearms, but the two districts that adopted policies to arm their staff later rescinded their policies after their insurer said it would discontinue their coverage. It's possible the qualified immunity granted by the law and the training requirements for school employees could convince insurers to continue covering districts with armed staff. Large school districts would have to hire school resource officers unless boards opt out. The state's largest school districts, those with 8,000 or more students, would be required to employ school resource officers in high schools unless the district school boards votes to opt out. Schools with fewer than 8,000 students would be encouraged to employ school resource officers, but not required. Another school security bill heads to Reynolds. Iowa lawmakers also sent a separate school security bill to Reynolds on Friday that includes new requirements for building safety standards and allows schools for professional development funds or allows schools to use professional development funds to pay for training for armed staff members. House lawmakers voted 55-35 Friday along party lines to pass House File 2652, sending it to Reynolds for her signature. The Senate voted 33-14 on Thursday to pass the bill, with Democratic Senators Tony Bisignano and Isaiah Knox of Des Moines joining every Republican in favor. Senator Dan Zumbach, Republican of Ryan, called the bill, quote, important to everyone, and said it is about Iowa and Iowa's children. This is an amazing tool that we can offer our schools, he said during Senate's debate. It's not just a tool, but it's a tool with tools. It's a full toolbox. Democrats opposed the bill, criticizing the portion that allows districts to use professional development funds to pay for the training of armed staff members. In any school district that may totally embrace this or use it for weapons training, my concern would be diverting too much money away from teaching and teaching how to learn, said Representative Ross Wilburn, Democrat of Ames. I just think it's a mistake. A previous version of the legislation would have provided $3 million for schools to pay costs associated with allowing staff members to carry guns in school, including obtaining the training necessary to receive a professional permit to carry weapons. The money could have also been used to purchase guns. The final bill strikes that language and instead says schools can use their professional development funding for, quote, any trainings required as a condition for a school employee to carry a weapon at the school during school hours. The bill would also require school districts to conduct school safety reviews and share the results with law enforcement, creating a task force to review school infrastructure safety and security standards, and require schools to have emergency radios that are capable of contacting law enforcement. The task force would include state and local law officials, superintendents, and private school president, school board members, building contractors, the state building commissioner, and an official from the state of the Department of Education. The group would be required to submit its findings to lawmakers by the end of the year. Schools would be required to meet the building safety standards before they could issue bonds for new building construction or renovation of athletic buildings. The bill allows schools to use saved sales tax dollars on school infrastructure, including firearm detection, software designed to integrate with the school security cameras, and to alert school employees and law enforcement if there is a visible, unholstered gun on school property. This bill also allows school buildings to have mobile panic alert systems capable of contacting law enforcement. And with that, we'll send it back to Seth.
Thanks, Rebecca. Turning to the Metro and Iowa section for another story on the just concluded state legislative session. Iowa lawmakers wrap up 2024 session. Gavel drops after late night marathon by Stephen Gruber Miller and Galen Bacharir. Iowa lawmakers have dropped the final gavel on the 2024 legislative session, working overnight to adjourn a year marked by Republicans approving consequential bills on education, taxes, and a range of other subjects. The session officially ended at 4:23 a.m. Saturday, its 104th day, after both chambers passed a resolution to adjourn sine die, capping a marathon final few days as lawmakers passed a series of bills setting the state's $8.9 billion budget and addressing a final cluster of policy priorities. Republicans, who control both the House and Senate, passed many of the proposals set out in Governor Kim Reynolds' annual January address. The most prominent and controversial was an overhaul of Iowa's area education agencies that makes broad changes to how special education, media, and other services are provided to K-12 districts and raises minimum teacher pay to $50,000 per year. Republicans used the final budget of the year to cut an additional $32.5 million out of the AEA's budget, using the bulk of the money to fund a new division of special education in the Iowa Department of Education and to pay for higher wages for paraeducators in schools. Lawmakers also shepherded through measures to implement a 3.8% flat tax next year, create a new crime of illegal reentry into the state by undocumented immigrants, enact language intended to protect religious freedom, consolidate dozens of state boards and commissions, and allow teachers and other school staff to obtain a professional permit to carry guns at school. Big and bold ideas have always been our focus, and our caucus has never shied away from difficult or complex issues. This year was no different, Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitver, Republican of Grimes, said in prepared remarks. This session was another tremendous success for Senate Republicans as we kept our promises to Iowans and focused on big reforms, bold changes, and major tax relief. Democrats, limited to super minorities in both chambers, frequently sought to dilute Republican priorities while urging them to pursue policies raising wages and improving health care, among other issues. Everything House Democrats proposed is for everyday Iowans. I'm darn proud of that, said House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst, Democrat of Windsor Heights. I'm really proud of what we did this year, and we think it draws a very sharp contrast about who is in this legislature is fighting for Iowans and who's fighting for special interests. Democrats pledged to take that message to the campaign trail this fall. Iowans will remember how Republicans chose to serve their governor rather than their constituents. They'll remember how they slashed our area education agencies and put special interests over Iowa's children, said Senate Minority Leader Pam Yoakum, Democrat of Dubuque, and they will remember in November. Lawmakers and staff found ways to keep themselves entertained during long hours of waiting in the final days before the session's end. Legislative pages and doormen lounged around the entrance to the House, humming along to the song, Come and Get Your Love, being played through a phone, while lawmakers huddled in closed-door meetings. Another page plucked tunes on a banjo on the Senate floor Friday afternoon. On Thursday evening, when the Senate had moved after 10 p.m. to adjourn for the day, staff seated along the edge of the chamber quietly cheered. Retiring lawmakers drew praise and gratitude from their colleagues as they wrapped up their work. My very last tax committee meeting in my life, Yoakum exclaimed Thursday, on the verge of retiring after 30 years in the Iowa legislature. Keep up the good work and always keep in mind that when we do anything, we need to do it for the greatest good for the greatest number, Yoakum told her fellow Ways and Means committee members. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican of Council Bluffs, called it an honor to serve on the committee with her and declared that no one else is going to beat you as a ranking member. A few filled their downtime with some good-natured ribbing of their colleagues. Representative Hans Wiltz, Republican of Ottumwa, turned the nameplate on Representative Austin Harris's desk upside down Thursday night. A few hours later, Harris, Republican of Moulton, noticed the sign and flipped it back around. A series of 11th-hour debates kept the Capitol lights on overnight and into early Saturday morning. House Republicans suspended the chamber's rules just after midnight to vote on legislation preventing new casinos from being built in Iowa until 2029. But the Senate adjourned without passing the measure. And throughout the night, both parties frequently broke for closed-door caucus meetings as key spending bills inched closer to agreement. The final budget of the year for standing appropriations cuts $32.5 million out of the AEA's budget. That includes a $7.5 million cut required by law, $10 million to fund the Division of Special Education, and $14 million for pay increases for paraeducators and other school staff. The final $1 million returns to the state's general fund. The budget also includes $2 million in new money for the Department of Public Safety to fund 12 positions to address the rise in illegal immigration and related criminal conduct such as drug trafficking and human trafficking. Much of the final week of the session was dedicated to final negotiations on the annual budget, which ended up at $8.9 billion for fiscal year 2025 and landed on Reynolds' desk by late Friday. The spending marks a roughly 4.5% increase over last year's $8.5 billion budget. Still, the Republicans' budget spends only 92% of the state's overall available revenue. Republicans have consistently budgeted less than the state takes in, leaving themselves room to continue annual discussions about cutting taxes. This year, that meant accelerating an existing series of gradual income tax cuts, a plan released by Republican tax writing chairs on Thursday and approved by both chambers Friday. Tucked into the budget bills were a 5% pay bump for judges and staff in the Iowa judicial branch, plus several policy priorities, including a ban on diversity, equity, and inclusion operations in higher education, with exceptions for compliance with federal law and accreditation. In a House committee Thursday debating the plan to cut taxes, lawmakers were offered a taste of the politics that are likely to await them as they head into election season this fall. "I would like to thank President Biden and this economy," said Representative Dave Jacoby, Democrat of Coralville. "Without that economy, we wouldn't be able to consider this bill today." Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican of Wilton, who served as an advisor to former President Donald Trump's Iowa caucus campaign, advanced the legislation while pledging to, quote, "make taxes great again." And now back to Rebecca for our next story.
All right, our next story is legislators approve tax trim to flat 3.8%. And this story also comes to us from Stephen Gruber Miller and Galen Bacherer. Iowans would pay a 3.8% flat income tax rate beginning next year under a bill state lawmakers sent to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk Friday night. The legislation, Senate File 2442, speeds up and builds on a 2022 law that was already set to take Iowa to a 3.9% flat income tax rate in 2026. It passed the Senate Friday morning on a 39-7 vote, with multiple Democrats joining Republicans in support. The House voted 68-24 to pass the bill Friday night, in the final hours before the legislative session was expected to end. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican of Council Bluffs, touted the bill as another step taken by the Republican-led legislature to make the Iowa tax code appealing nationally. "We want to return more of the money back to you," Dawson said. "We are absolutely re-engineering this tax code to be one of the most competitive in the nation." The Democrats who opposed the plan argued that it would provide the biggest benefit to wealthy Iowans. Senator Nate Bolton, Democrat of Des Moines, voted for the plan but urged Republicans to do more to provide relief to lower-income families. "This bill does not deliver a fair tax system," Bolton said. "But at the end of the day, it does make a difference to get this relief sooner rather than later." In a statement after the bill's passage Friday, Reynolds said, quote, "It's time that the state government stop over-collecting from hardworking men and women of Iowa. Iowa families live within their means every day, and there's no reason government can't do the same. Thanks to conservative budgeting and fiscal responsibility, Iowa is in a strong position to cut taxes and continue to invest in key priorities like housing, childcare, broadband, and more," Reynolds said. How much is the 3.8% flat tax expected to reduce revenue? The state's top individual income tax rate this year is 5.7%, and under current law is already set to drop to 4.82% next year. The additional reduction included in the legislation would reduce state revenue by $328.2 million in the next fiscal year, by $605.3 million in fiscal year 2026, and by $97 million in fiscal year 2027, according to an analysis by nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency. In all fiscal year 2030, the reduction is estimated to be at $1.329 billion. Tax relief could be used to make up revenue shortfall. If state revenues drop below state spending during a fiscal year, the bill would cover 50% of the costs from the state's taxpayer relief fund. The other half would come from the state's ending balance. That part of the bill would be repealed on July 1, 2029. The LSA analysis of the bill says state revenues are not estimated to fall below the state spending levels through fiscal year 2029, meaning the relief fund would not need to be used. The state ended the previous fiscal year with $2.7 billion in the taxpayer relief fund. Bill allows counties to get rid of county compensation boards. The bill gives counties the ability to eliminate county compensation boards, which review salaries for elected county officials and recommend increases. Under current law, county boards of supervisors may not raise elected officials' pay by more than the compensation board's recommendation. If the board of supervisors decides to reduce the pay recommended by the board, it may do so only by an equal percentage for all officials. The legislation also repeals an 1848 law requiring Lee County, the only county in Iowa with two courthouses, to maintain courthouses in both Fort Madison and Keokuk. Lawmakers tweak limits on city and county revenue growth. The legislation makes changes to a property tax law passed last year that limits how much city and county property tax revenue can grow. Under current law, if a city or a county's total assessed property value grows by more than 3%, it must use some of the excess revenue to reduce its general fund levy. Different tiers specify how much the government must reduce its levy, depending on whether its values grow 3% to 6%, or more than 6%. The legislation changes the thresholds. Under the bill, if a county's revenue grows by 2.75% or less, it will not need to reduce its general property tax levy. The bill creates new tiers for cities and counties whose property values grow from 2.75% to 4%, from 4% to 6%, and more than 6%. Proposed amendments would make it harder to raise taxes. Lawmakers this year have also approved a pair of proposed constitutional amendments to make it more difficult to raise taxes in the future. One would require a two-thirds vote of the Iowa legislature to increase Iowa's individual and corporate income tax rates rather than a simple majority vote. Another would require Iowa to have a flat individual income tax rate rather than a graduated income tax system if the state imposes an income tax at all. Both the proposed amendments would need to pass legislation again in 2025 or 2026 before placement on a statewide general election ballot. And back to Seth.
Thanks, Rebecca. Turning back to the front section of the Des Moines Sunday Register, Biden's China tariff warnings signal intense battle on trade, by Jarrett Renshaw of Reuters. The Biden administration's threat to impose more tariffs on China is the latest election year signal that frostier relations with China are likely to follow, regardless of who wins the presidency. President Joe Biden traveled to the battleground state of Pennsylvania on Wednesday to call for higher tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum products, and top administration officials have signaled those are unlikely to be his last salvo against China this year. The same day, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen signaled that tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles may be necessary to protect American workers from Beijing's glut of overproduction. Last week, the administration also launched an investigation into what it said were China's attempts to dominate the maritime, logistics, and shipbuilding industries. Many experts now think the result of that probe and an ongoing multi-year review of Trump-era trade policies will be even more new tariffs on imports from China. Liu Pengyu, spokesperson at the Chinese embassy in Washington, said U.S. tariffs embody unilateralism and protectionism. Many trading partners of the United States, including China, are strongly dissatisfied with the United States' frequent use of national security, non-market behavior, overcapacity, and other reasons to impose restrictions and politicize trade issues, Peng Yu said in a statement on Wednesday in response to the proposed steel tariffs. The Biden administration's decision to ramp up tariffs last week suggests a hawkish trade climate heading into the 2024 election, as Biden and his Republican rival Donald Trump see a tough-on-China stance as part of the road to victory, particularly in Rust Belt states like Michigan and Pennsylvania. Trump has proposed 10% across-the-board import tariffs if he were to return to the White House. He also proposes phasing out Chinese imports of goods such as electronics, steel, and pharmaceuticals over 4 years, and wants to prohibit Chinese companies from owning U.S. infrastructure in the energy and tech sectors. 41% of Americans named China as the greatest U.S. enemy in a Gallup poll released in March, making it the top perceived U.S. adversary for the fourth straight year, the polling group said. China is inevitably getting drawn into what's likely to be a little bit of a chaotic cycle. And I think really, right now, we're just seeing the beginnings of that, said Alan Carlson, a Cornell University professor and expert on U.S.-China relations. White House officials dismissed the idea that politics is at play, even as Biden trumpeted the proposed steel tariffs in an emotional anti-Trump speech at the United Steelworkers Union headquarters in Pennsylvania. Instead, administration officials say they fear a flood of low-cost exports from China is jeopardizing billions of dollars in tax incentives secured by Biden to anchor industries like solar, wind, and electric vehicles in the United States. China's slow-growing economy is forcing manufacturers to double down on exports to offset weak domestic demand growth, causing China's manufacturing trade surplus to surge to record levels, administration officials say. Double-sided solar panels, known as bifacials, provide an example of the administration's concerns. The administration granted a tariff exemption to China until 2026 to help promote solar power in the U.S., but now officials are expected to lift the ban and impose tariffs after cheap cells flooded the U.S. market, Reuters reported Wednesday. South Korea's Hanwei Qcells asked the administration to lift the ban to protect a pledged $2.5 billion expansion of its U.S. solar manufacturing presence against competition from cheaper Asian-made products. Biden's aides said their administration's policies differed from Trump's in key respects, including being narrowly targeted to specific industries and products, which could lower the odds of strong retaliation by China and others. And another brief story before we head to birthdays at the top of the hour. Time 100 list names Sioux City native Ford, CEO of Land O'Lakes and advocate for farmers, by Victoria Reyna Rodriguez. Her first job was detasseling corn. Now she's CEO of Land O'Lakes. Iowa native Beth Ford made the Time 100 Most Influential People list for 2024. Beth Ford, age 60, is a Sioux City native and Iowa State graduate. She became CEO of Land O'Lakes, an agribusiness cooperative of thousands of farmers, in 2018. Her appointment made her the first openly gay woman to lead a Fortune 500 company, according to Time. Ford has been a vocal advocate for farmers during her tenure at Land O'Lakes. The citation in Time, written by BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, said Ford has been at the forefront of a national effort to invest in America's rural communities. He cited work from expanding broadband coverage to helping farmers adapt to the changing climate, strengthening trade efforts, and building agricultural funding. This isn't Ford's first time on a Time 100 list. She made the Time 100 Climate Leaders list in 2023 for her work to increase sustainable practices in agriculture and rural America.